and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report, a big victory by a tiny margin for President Trump and his sweeping domestic spending plan.
On this vote, the yeas are 215, the nays are 214, with one answering present. The bill is passed.
House Speaker Mike Johnson announcing the outcome of a vote about a half an hour ago following an all-night debate that eventually won over GOP hardliners, worried about hundreds of billions in new spending and its effect on the federal deficit. CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns.
It cuts billions in federal spending to Medicaid, food stamps, and energy subsidies. And this is the key. It extends, makes permanent Trump's tax cuts.
Alabama Democrat Terry Sewell, a no vote.
It's outrageous. It's simply unacceptable. This is a sad day in Congress.
The measure also delivers on the president's promises of no taxes on tips and overtime wages. CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Hi, this is Beth, host of The Kitchen's Open. Join us each Monday morning at the top of the 10 o'clock hour for tips, tricks, and a whole lot of fun. The Kitchen's Open, only on WFHR.
For Civic Media News, I'm Brittany Merlot. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and the latest report from the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health shows a spike in the number of young people who are struggling. And 1 in 5 adults in the country experience mental illness every year. The National Alliance on Mental Health says many hesitate to seek help from stigma, fear, or uncertainty.
Feeling anxious and uncertain is incredibly normal. Most people feel that way. But also, letting them know that we might never feel 100% ready. It might never feel like the right time. We might always have a little bit of anxiety going into it. But usually we have to get through that anxiety and get through that tough experience in order to start to feel better.
That's Jessica Schaefer, a licensed clinical therapist with Aspirus Health. She says one of the most effective ways to begin improving mental health well-being is through emotional self-awareness. By tuning into our internal cues throughout the day, we can address feelings like stress or being overwhelmed before they escalate.
Just like we pay attention to our body, if we're hungry, then that means we need to eat, right? So listening to our emotions. If I'm starting to feel overwhelmed, instead of pushing that off throughout the workday or throughout the entire week, maybe I check in with myself, give myself a little bit of break.
And for those looking to support someone else, Schaefer recommends leading with empathy and curiosity. Instead of offering advice right away, start by asking what they need.
Some people are going to want to really share, and some people aren't going to feel ready to do that. And we all want and require support in different ways.
And building resilience can start with small but powerful habits. Practices like noticing moments of gratitude or surrounding yourself with emotionally supportive people can help you feel more grounded, especially during challenging times.
Find the silver lining in things that are going on in our life.
For Civic Media News, I'm Brittany Merlot.
It's the Brewers and the Pirates. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers scheduled to open a four-game series tonight in Pittsburgh that continues over the weekend. Yesterday, they lost to Baltimore 8-4 in extra innings and had to bring in Tyler Alexander again to close the game.
I was ready to go today. I mean, even though it was emergency and before the 11th, after McGill threw, it's tough losing no matter what. So that's never fun. And as close as this ballgame was, it definitely hurts to lose.
The crew is back in Milwaukee on Monday, Memorial Day, against the Red Sox. At the NFL meetings, owners deciding not to ban the Eagles' tush-push play. Meanwhile, Packers head coach Matt LaFleur asked, did they think about bringing receiver Davante Adams back to Green Bay?
Anytime you have a player of that caliber, there's definitely conversations that go into it. And sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. He is the ultimate competitor and he treats practice like it's game day.
That's Matt LaFleur with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
It is going to be partly cloudy today with a high in the upper 50s to near 60 this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy. We're going to drop to the upper 30s to near 40. Tomorrow, lots of sunshine. Almost just like today with a high right around 60. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
Child abuse is not a bad parent problem.
And the causes may be different than you think.
You see, paid family leave,
that prevents child abuse.
And high quality, affordable child care
prevents child abuse too.
Prevent Child Abuse America promotes programs and resources informed by science that help communities, parents, and kids thrive.
Because when we keep families out of crisis,
we prevent child abuse
from ever happening.
Go to preventchildabuse.org to learn more.
Let's solve child abuse before it ever happens.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Last week, I asked if if me swallowing like 100 mayflies on a walk breaks a fast, because I was doing intermittent fasting. 0.008 calories per fly.
You are breaking a fast, though.
Probably.
It's not zero.
It's not zero calories.
So you did.
Well, that really sucks. I mean, don't get me wrong, they tasted good.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we continue on the road this week, live from Eau Claire, Wisconsin, home of WCFW, The Tap, talking about conservation and more. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
All right, the second cup of coffee has been poured, so good morning. It is 7:06, and it is nice to have you here up north on this Thursday morning, May 22nd. We've got Michelle Velasquez from Planned Parenthood Advocates standing by to talk to us about the dangers of the budget cuts being proposed by Donald Trump and congressional Republicans on Medicaid, on health care, and more. In our second half hour here, we'll be talking to a gentleman from Dane County who helps get people enrolled for Medicaid and SNAP food assistance benefits. He's gone to Washington, D.C. this week to try to persuade congressional Republicans not to make these dangerous cuts to people's vital services for health care, for nutrition, and more. But as we've learned in the past hour, the House of Representatives, by one of the narrowest of margins, did pass their so-called big, beautiful bill and sent it on to the Senate with punishing cuts to all of these programs and more. It will no doubt be altered by Republicans who control the U.S. Senate, but some kind of punishing cuts will be there nonetheless to fund billionaire tax cuts. And we'll talk to Michelle Velasquez and Zab Martinez throughout the course of this hour more about that. Then in our 8 o'clock hour, we will be talking to Joe Zepecki, a candidate for state Democratic Party chair. We are doing that back to back to back. We talked to Devin Remicker yesterday. We'll talk to William Garcia tomorrow, all in our 8 o'clock hour. Also coming up in today's 8 o'clock hour, Sean O'Malley will talk to us about money and markets, and we'll check in with Chad Holmes as well for stories that he's following for Civic Media in the Wausau area. So much ahead, but let's first turn our attention to meteorologist Brittany Merlot, who, look at that smile she's got. You can tell the sun is out. Pat's not going to yell anymore. It's gorgeous out there. Greg's playing the harp. He actually brings one into the studio. It's crazy. Yep. And so here we are on a sun-splashed Thursday morning. Brittany, good morning.
Oh, good morning. That sun-splashed. Oh, yes. That sounds so good. And that's exactly what's happening out there. If you don't have it in full force just yet down south, don't worry. It's headed your way. I don't see a cloud in the sky right now in central Wisconsin. It is a little bit more cloudy, though, down south. We do still have a frost advisory in effect until 9 o'clock this morning, far up north. Temperatures are at 30 degrees into Ashland and Superior. Yeah, below freezing. We're still going to see some cold nights ahead as these clear skies take over. It's 48 degrees right now into Kenosha, and it's going to be partly sunny throughout the entire day today. We are going to hit highs in those mid to upper 50s. But of course, more scattered frost is possible north. We've got a ton of sunshine still tomorrow, for Saturday, for Sunday. Maybe a few more clouds out there Monday and a chance of showers, but dry conditions and slowly warming temperatures. We will hit those 60s all across the state as soon as tomorrow. We're going to keep rising a few degrees every single day, and then we'll be in the upper 60s by Memorial Day.
All right. From Robin Tigerton, good morning. It's sunny and 41 degrees. We picked up 3/4 of an inch of rain from Tuesday through last night. Between breaks, I got 4 yards mowed in Tigerton and got 5 more to do today. The farmer that leases my family farm told me the recent cool weather has the hay crop yields a little lower because of those recent cooler temperatures. Rob apparently is liking the daily history lesson because he says that Greg and I are Wisconsin's version of Casey Kasem
for music history. Well, thank you very much.
And I love that. Rob says he's got 6 more yards to do today, but that Brittany is always sunshine every day.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rob.
That was so nice. We're going to do this again.
And in terms of, again, talking about music history, especially now with Parker Olson joining the show here, Alicia says, anyone my kid's age makes me feel old right now. And Cassandra says, hey, Alicia, my oldest, it's only 7, and it makes me feel old. So the fact that Tony's writing up in Ashland that Parker is making him feel old just warms my heart to know that it's just all part of the circle of life here.
Where you're welcome.
Yeah. We've got, you know what, maybe I'll run this one by Brittany over here. We were talking about musical remakes.
Sure.
And which one did I just ask you about? It was a Gwen Stefani song from Shizu there, right, Parker? Oh, yeah, here it is. Shizu says, kind of like Gwen Stefani's Rich Girl is a remake from Fiddler on the Roof. Mm-hmm.
She samples that, yeah. She's like,
oh, yes. Okay.
She doesn't cover it, but she uses the music as the bedrock of the track.
Oh,
my mind is blown. I didn't know that.
I love these little musical nuggets.
Oh, I could talk about this all day.
Oh, you know, there is this line between sampling and plagiarism. Okay, and nobody can say clearly where the line is for any given song, but when sampling is done right, absolutely love it. Yeah. But there's other songs where you go, oh, you're just ripping off this other person, you know?
Looking at you, the Strokes. What?
Did Parker, do you not agree with that?
I think he's looking around for the Strokes right now.
I'm just looking around.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
All right. And I'm sure I'm getting a message from Luke going, what do you mean? Because I bet you Luke loves the Strokes.
I'll bet that's part of his cover band. He probably sings a lot of those. Brittany, thank you. We'll get another update in our next hour.
Sounds good.
All right. Along the way, you can join the show 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can also use the Civic Media app to call the show, text the show. And now we are just introducing a fresh new feature on the Civic Media app, voice notes. So you can, again, you know, type in a message to us or you can call live. But if you want to leave us something but you don't want to talk live on the phone, on the radio, use the voice note feature. Go to any one of the radio stations where we're on and hit that voice note and you can record a short voice message to us. And if we like it, if you're making a good point, if you're asking a good question, we'll pop that up on the radio as well. So, again, part of the Civic Media app. At 7:13, let's talk a bit more about what is being proposed by congressional Republicans, President Trump, Elon Musk, and others who, and I cannot say this enough times, are making massive spending cuts that are not designed to offset harm to the national debt. They're not designed to put money back into the pocket of middle-class Americans. Because if either one of those things were happening, there might be more public support for them. But they're not. All of these cuts that are being made are going to help pay for more tax cuts for the very wealthy and blow up the debt and the budget deficit. So what's it going to do to real folks? And Michelle Velasquez joins us now from Planned Parenthood Advocates of Wisconsin, and we'll be talking in the next half hour with a benefits specialist talking specifically about Medicaid and SNAP and the way folks would be hurt in Wisconsin as well. Michelle, hello. How are you?
Good morning. I'm okay, all things considered. Thanks
yes.
for having me.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when you look at, you know, the totality, I mean, the numbers are staggering in terms of, you know, what would be the number of people that would be losing Medicaid, who'd lose coverage under the Affordable Care Act, so many other things. From a Planned Parenthood health care standpoint, I know you're certainly running the numbers on how harmful this would be.
Absolutely. There is actually a specific provision in this bill that would defund Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin and all Planned Parenthoods who provide abortion care around the country in places where it has remained legal. And that is because there is a provision that specifically would prohibit Medicaid reimbursement for health services, although unrelated to abortion, prohibit that reimbursement to nonprofit family planning providers that also provide abortion care. So in Wisconsin, that would really jeopardize Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin's ability to continue to provide the extensive care that it currently does to about 50 to 60,000 patients annually at 21 health centers across the state.
And that is a point that really needs to be made, I think, repeatedly, is that when, because so many people have tried to equate Planned Parenthood with only abortion services, that there is so much more to it, and that the federal funds that we're talking about here are not, they're not, it doesn't sound to me like they're going to stop one abortion, that this is all about all of the other healthcare services that Planned Parenthood provides.
Absolutely. Federal and state Medicaid dollars in Wisconsin already do not fund abortion. So those dollars are never used to reimburse for abortion care. However, what they are used for is to ensure that people across the state in rural communities, in underserved communities, communities without access to affordable quality health care can get birth control, STI testing and treatment, cancer screenings, well women's visits, all of the sort of what I would consider basic health care that everybody deserves to have access to. And that's really what's at stake here.
And this isn't just women as well that are that receive basic health care services from Planned Parenthood.
Absolutely. All people, men, women, non-binary people, people from all communities, all walks of life are always welcome at Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin, and they receive excellent, high quality expert care in sexual and reproductive health. And in fact, defunding Planned Parenthood would save no money to the federal government and would actually end up costing the federal government more money. And the reason is because people would go without health care. They'd go without birth control. So there would be potentially STIs that would go untreated that need more extensive treatment down the road or that lead to other health issues. There would be unplanned pregnancies that people would then be forced to continue because they don't have access to abortion care or they didn't have access to birth control. And now there are additional costs, of course, related to those types of things, cancers that go undetected and then need more treatment, people going to emergency rooms or urgent care departments rather than seeking those healthcare services at Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin where they're currently receiving that care.
Now, people who think of Planned Parenthood as just these urban clinics in a few city centers, we know what the rural healthcare crisis is like. And I would make a safe bet that your patient base is not restricted to folks who live in the cities where your clinics are located.
That's absolutely correct. We have Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin has 21 health centers across the state. There's a health center in Eau Claire, La Crosse, Green Bay, a few in the Fox Valley, Wisconsin Rapids. So there's a virtual health center so people can access quite a lot of care, through telehealth services. So the reach is very, very wide across the state.
We were talking to Michelle Velasquez from Planned Parenthood Advocates about the punishing cuts that are being put in place and how they would impact things like Medicaid and services that are provided. And again, we're talking about this from a Wisconsin standpoint, but you would know that Planned Parenthood services nationwide, I mean, it's just got to be a staggering number of people who would be impacted if this current budget were to pass as is.
Absolutely. There's nearly 200 health centers operated by various Planned Parenthood affiliates across the country. And this defund would result in more than 1 million people losing access to health care.
We will be talking more in our next half hour about some of the other cuts being made by Donald Trump and Republicans in Congress on Wisconsin families who are in need of food assistance and stable and affordable health care. That's all ahead yet here on the program this morning. Quick check of sports at 7:19 before we take a break. There were some ninth inning heroics yesterday at American Family Field. It wasn't quite enough as the Brewers fell to Baltimore 8-4 in 11 innings. The Brewers are on the verge of losing 3-2, but a bottom of the ninth RBI single by Caleb Durbin sent the game to extras. In the 10th, Baltimore pulled ahead, but the Brewers tied it again on a Jackson Churio RBI single. But then in the 11th, the Orioles got to pitcher Tyler Alexander with a three-run homer and one more for good measure. The Brewers now travel to Pittsburgh, and the pregame coverage will begin at 5:05 on several Civic Media stations. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn much more. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Lakeland Care is proud to be named one of the top workplaces in Wisconsin for 2025. But what really sets us apart is our commitment to providing personalized support for frail elders and adults with disabilities. Our care teams go above and beyond to help our members live their best lives with dignity and independence. Interested in becoming a member? Visit your local Aging and Disability Resource Center to see if you qualify. To learn more, visit www.lakelandcareinc.com. Lakeland Care. Together, we build better lives.
Better begins with the way we live life together, the way we help each other, and the way we inspire and encourage one another. At Aspirus Health, better begins with our dedication to providing expert care that improves lives, establishing healthy families and healthy communities, yours and ours, for a lifetime. Life is a journey, and we're here for you. Better begins at Aspirus Health. Passion for excellence, compassion for people.
Get those oars ready. It's time for Rafter Baseball. Your Wisconsin Rapids Rafter season is here, and there's never been a better time to get to legendary Winter Field. They have new and classic promotions going on all summer. And remember, if you can't get to the park, every hit, every pitch, every win is at 97.5 WFHR. We will have every game broadcast here as it's been for 16 years. Get to know the team with our segment, Meet Your Rafters, and listen for ticket giveaways. It's going to be a memorable summer with your Wisconsin Rapids Rafters and your 97.5 FM WFHR. Let's play ball.
Breaking sports radio show news coming across the ticker. In a move for the ages, 105.5 WIRI has traded for playmakers. Join us 4 to 5 Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. Hit us in the numbers by calling with your sports takes and feelings. We'll have James, Randy, Michael, and Seth bringing you local sports coverage and news that you won't hear anywhere else. Thanks to our friends at Quality Plus Printing and Family Natural Foods. Be heard 4 to 5 every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on 105.5 WIRI's newest roster edition, Playmakers. We speak sport.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.
Come work with us. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. And now for something local from WFHR and WIRI Studios.
Hello all, welcome to WFHR's Rapids Report. I have your host, James J. Mayloff here, and we're welcoming into the studio not only our good friend, Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Matt Zacher. Matt, always good to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Morning, James. Thanks for having me, as always.
Want to say a big shout out to our friends at Wisconsin Rapids Community Media. Do yourself a favor, go to YouTube, subscribe to their page, keep up to date on all the cool things that they are doing over there, and a lot of the newer ideas you guys have been doing over there, especially the pairing of this with the mayor and the media and some of the spotlights that you guys have been doing and everything. I've really been enjoying those.
Yeah, we're working hard between Joe and Taylor and Emily and myself, and just coming up with ideas, all the department heads. The main goal since I got elected, or even part of, you know, my running, was to develop the communication between us within the departments, within the city, so that we're working more efficiently. But ultimately, the goal is to be able to get that information out to the people and then have a direct line for them to get back in touch with us. We're also taking taking on the big project, and it takes a long time. I didn't really know this, but developing a whole new website for the for the city, it's going to be a whole new design, a whole new company, a lot more tools that we can use for communication to be able to get that information out there, and then utilize these podcast type situations, formats where we can really have conversations with the department heads and what's going on, try to tap into some of the bigger issues that are out there and get as much information out to the community as possible. So it's been great, and I look forward to a lot of great things coming from it.
When you were first running, one of the things that we noted, and you yourself and your campaign noted, is your business background and experience and everything. And certainly we thought that that would be helpful and come into play on an economic level in some of those things. I also think it's noteworthy when it comes to transparency and how you've approached this position with that. I know how important that was to you in business, and still is, of course. And to see that transition into politics is very refreshing and very welcomed. And it's something that's really important to you. But it's one thing to talk a good game. You've been backing it up, and I appreciate that. And I know that I'm not alone in that. I've heard that from community members and everything. More times than not, when I'm saying something, it's something that I'm repeating from somebody in the community they've said to me or something. But I think it's noteworthy because we don't get to do that very often with our politicians. I think that's interesting.
Well, it's greatly appreciated, and it doesn't it's tricky, but I for sure appreciate the feedback from the community, from you and from other people that have said that to you. And I have heard it in different ways of people just saying thank you for, you know, even calling me directly and just saying we appreciate that information. And really, again, I guess I look at everybody as we're all leaders in our own right, whether it's with our families, our jobs, our businesses, or in the community. So we should all be treated as such. And I think the further we treat the community as our employers, the better off we're going to be in the long run. And that just comes down to getting them as much information as possible. Again, there's sometimes that I have to be cautious just for, you know, NDAs and all that, to just make sure we don't step on toes. I know we'll touch on that a little bit with the mill and what's going on there, but I appreciate that. And I appreciate the fact that, you know, I'm hired by the community or elected by the community slash hired to be the guy that's, you know, in charge of getting this information and being able to smartly or, you know, wisely differentiate between what should and shouldn't be said when and all that stuff. And it's tricky, especially when you do believe in, you know, the free flow of information and then put the brakes on. So it's been good, and I appreciate it, and I appreciate the feedback and letting me know that we're in the right direction.
I have amazing editors, whether it's Seth or Laura or even you know, Joe at the community media. When I say bad things, I just write them like, you got to edit that out, man. You can't let – please don't go public with that. I wish that – I do so much live radio. That could never happen. You speak of the community and the outreach and hearing back and feedback and those things, so it leads me perfectly into the community survey that just recently wrapped up in April, was completed in April, and we haven't gotten a chance to really touch on that too much. What is in the works with that, and what are some of your bigger takeaways from that?
Yeah, so that was a part of the bigger picture of, you know, reaching out to the community. At first, we started with the department heads, and then we were able to go to the employees and do surveys with them, which then led us to the community. We went to the aldermen, and they said, let's get it out to the community. So we've been able to do that now. And it's a long process. It takes a lot of time to get all that coordinated.
It's a lot of data.
And Joe and Emily have done a great job in putting that all together and getting it out there. So that being said, the feedback, and this is all going to the aldermen. We're going to have a big committee of the whole on the 29th, talking mainly about, you know, mission, vision, values based on this community survey or a communication survey is what do we want. Also talking more in depth about the budget for 2026 and what we should be looking towards, and getting the department heads to start talking now halfway through the year about what's coming in 26 so that we know where we're going. But ultimately, I don't think anything was too much of a surprise, but as the community is evolving from, you know, the mill economy to a more entrepreneurial, fast-paced, you know, where people are starting up businesses, and they are. I mean, again, I don't take any credit for it besides saying, do it. Like, don't take the risk, be courageous, and go out there and start a business and just work hard and figure it out as you go along. But then again, for what our job for the city is ultimately, provide the infrastructure that we need in order to make sure we can function on a day-to-day basis. Again, there's 230 that I call kind of invisible people that work for the city that do all this work all day long in the nooks and crannies in order to make sure that the city functions the way it does. And it's a great city and they're doing a great job. I understand there's issues. Nothing's going to be perfect. We have to deal with roads and we are dealing with them on a day-to-day basis. And we'll touch base on that a little bit later. Infrastructure was a big one. Transparency is a big one. They want to know what's going on, what we're doing, that what we're doing is for their benefit, not for our own benefit. I think that's a big one, and that's one thing that I strive for all the time.
I'm with you. A lot mm-hmm. of the data that's coming from this, I think, was a lot of stuff that's confirming more than surprising exactly. With yep. a lot of it. Yep. But one thing that I did find, I'd say borderline surprising to me, was just the look into public transportation and some more conversation of that being had. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how close we are to that happening or not or any of those things, but it's a conversation that I think a lot of people in the community have had in private or maybe with one or two friends, mm-hmm. and now it just seems like it's been talked about a little bit more. Yep. Again, don't know if that means we need to do something or not.
You were just listening to The Rapids Report, a show for the community by the community. To hear the full episode of The Rapids Report, visit our website, civicmedia.us/shows/rapids-report, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
The hops growing season is underway, but the industry is kind of in a limbo, with recent studies showing that there are less people drinking beer. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and Matthew Jansen, the marketing and sales manager with the Wisconsin Hop Exchange, is here to give Wisconsin's point of view on the hops industry.
Well, I think from a Wisconsin perspective, like from the hop side of the equation, we are seeing a shift across producers. But I don't know if we could pinpoint that necessarily to the drinking of beer, and maybe it's more part of the hop industry's overall oversupply that we're currently dealing with right now.
Jansen also says that Wisconsin hops are a bit unique as they tend to give beer more of a fruity flavor. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo, and we'll take a look at those markets next.
Veltima fungicide out-yields the competition by an average of 7 bushels per acre. But you've never been average. The only competition that really matters is you versus you. And with the performance of Veltima fungicide from BASF, you can take your best results even further. Beat your own record. Get every bushel you deserve. And make this your best season yet with Veltima fungicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Wisconsin soybean growers have a lot of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
Welcome back. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report. Now let's take a look and see how the markets are moving. It is a downward trend all the way around this morning, with cash corn down 2.25 cents at 458 3/4, and new crop corn down 2 cents at 453 1/2. Cash soybeans are seeing losses of 6.25 cents at 1056 1/2, with new crop soybeans down 9 cents at 1043 1/4. July wheat contracts are also seeing losses, down 3.25 cents at 546. Class 3 milk is following this same trend, with June contracts down 15 cents at 1948 a hundredweight, and July contracts down 14 cents at 1951 a hundredweight. With a look at your markets this morning, from the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
It is going to be partly cloudy today with a high in the upper 50s to near 60 this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy. We're going to drop to the upper 30s to near 40. Tomorrow, lots of sunshine. Almost just like today with a high right around 60. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Richard Trent, the executive director of Main Street Alliance.
This current tax code that they're trying to extend, 80%+ of the benefit goes to the top 1% of earners.
Yes.
I did not misspeak there. This is not a game. Trump will tell you firsthand that he grew up believing there are winners and there are losers. This is an administration actively trying to create a class of losers, and we have to fight back.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Yo, I'm your old basketball. Haven't seen you out on the courts in a while. Why not pass me over to Goodwill? Donating me helps Goodwill's mission to provide career training and support services right here in the community. And that's a slam dunk. Donate today. Hey, I got next.
To find your nearest Goodwill locations and to learn more about our mission, please visit goodwill.org. Goodwill, where your things start new lives.
Maggie Dawn.
At 4:30, we'll be joined by Allison McManus of the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We'll discuss the impacts of the draconian cuts to veteran health care from the big, brutal bill.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
As Donald Trump and Republicans in Congress try to make massive cuts to safety net programs in order to give the wealthiest people and companies more tax breaks, they're doing so under the phony cover of attacking so-called waste, fraud, and abuse. Now, that's not to say there isn't some level of misuse in any program. Same could be said in your workplace. But that doesn't mean you fire a chunk of the workforce in order to give the CEO a bigger paycheck. But the truth is that a lot of Americans are hurting for a variety of reasons. And instead of providing more jobs or more job training or opportunities for education or help with childcare or healthcare costs, the response from Trump and Republicans to all these financially struggling families is, well, too bad. Our friends need the money. We talked to someone who helps process SNAP and Medicaid eligibility for struggling families in Wisconsin. He traveled to Washington this week to give members of the state's congressional delegation an insider's view of how these massive cuts would impact real people in our state.
My name is Abdiel Martinez. My job is I'm a SNAP and Medicaid eligibility specialist. The official title is Economic Support Specialist, and I do that in Dane County, Wisconsin.
At what point do you have your first point of contact with somebody, and then tell me how the process is supposed to work?
There's four ways you could apply. You can apply the paper format. You can apply over the phone. You can apply on the online website that they have, or come into a local agency and apply in person. When you apply, we ask for verification of income. Depending on if there's an immigration status, right? So if they're not a U.S. citizen, we ask to verify immigration status. Once we verify the income for SNAP, we look at utilities and expenses. After going through all that and jumping through all those hoops, right, every case is always different. After all that, though, we go ahead and review their income, you know, if they're above or below the income limits. If they're below, they would be eligible and we would be able to get them set up with the, you know, for the SNAP benefits, for Medicaid and items like that. And if they don't qualify, we give them resources to the local areas where they could look for, you know, alternative care, free clinics, go to the marketplace, the Affordable Care Act, and just kind of give them a couple other options that way.
How is it conveyed to people when they first come to you that this is temporary relief designed to help get you through a tough time, and that this is not something that would necessarily be a permanent state? I mean, it may be for, say, Medicaid, disability, and things like that, but especially SNAP or for people who are newly unemployed, how is that conveyed that this is, in a perfect world, meant to be a temporary bridge to better times?
You know, when it comes to to SNAP and Medicaid, it really comes to a point where, you have people who, from all backgrounds, are applying, right? You could see people who just lost their jobs applying. You could see people who may have not have applied in years. and are reapplying after 5, 6, 7 years since they last received the benefit. It really depends on the situation people are going through. And, you know, you have a family of five where both mom and dad are working full time and still can't afford their groceries. If they have insurance to their job, you know, the cost of that insurance to have for their kids is too high for them where they can't afford it. And so Medicaid kind of fills in that gap where they can get the Medicaid for their children, despite them working both full time. But it's to a point where, you know, if it becomes unaffordable, if they can't afford food after working full time or healthcare, you know, is it really temporary, or, you know, it comes up to kind of a point where they have to kind of rely on that?
Well, especially, yes, for the children and for their health. So this whole notion that we're hearing the need for all these cuts because there's waste from all these folks who are otherwise employable, it seems to me that really misses how unstable families are economically around Wisconsin and around the country. And I wonder if you share that sense of economic instability that a lot of families are experiencing.
You know, it's kind of interesting to hear those phrases, you know, because I try to look at it kind of based on my experience. You know, I've been doing this job for a year. And before that, I would work at a hospital to help people apply for Medicaid. I was at a company. This wasn't through the state or the county or anything. And I would see people in many different situations where they don't have insurance, or they just lost their insurance, and they have to pay, let's just say around about $20,000 for appendix, for ER visit. And it comes to a point where when you're in the hospital, you're recovering and things like that, and you can't work, you're not able to work because everyone's body recovers differently. You can't work for X amount of weeks or months, you know, depending on your situation. You know, on paper, yeah, maybe it looks like you can work, but in reality, you can't because of your health, because of this, because of that. So that's what I try to focus on the most when I hear those words of fraud and being able to work. It's just like it's an individual basis. You know, it's really just the need people have at some point.
There was a phrase that I used a lot when I was campaigning, that there are just so many people in Wisconsin who are one illness, one accident, or one layoff away from poverty. And it has always appeared to me that there is a certain group of folks in the country and in the state that don't want to believe that many families really are that close, that one accident, one injury, one illness, one layoff would make that big a difference. Do you see that on a regular basis?
I would say yes. I mean, I can say, you know, a couple weeks ago, I've gotten calls from, you know, a young person who had some savings that they waited until the last minute to apply for SNAP benefits. There's people who didn't expect to lose their jobs over the winter, and all of a sudden, you know, they got their last paycheck, they got paid good money, and, you know, all of a sudden they don't have insurance, they don't have food security anymore for the next month and the following month, because who knows how long it takes for them to get their job. And so, you know, and kind of adding on to what you were saying, Pat, you know, not just that, I think in reality, we're just two or three paychecks away from having to make decisions of, do we decide to pay for food, or do we decide to take our children to the doctor? Do we decide to buy this necessity for our transportation, or do we decide, oh, you know, to buy dinner for tonight? So, you know, kind of adding on to that, you know, it really doesn't take that long for us to find ourselves in a situation where we would need to apply for these programs.
When you do that as a SNAP eligibility specialist, and again, I say this as somebody who, you know, grew up on, you know, what you would call food stamps with a single mom back in the day there. So when you hear that there's this potential for billions, maybe even a couple $100 billion in cuts to SNAP and other nutritional assistance programs, I mean, that's such a big number, I don't think registers at the human level with a lot of people. If that were to really happen, what would be the human toll, do you think, around where you live and around Wisconsin and the country?
where to begin on that. I mean, just looking at SNAP specifically, the max for one a single household, right, one person in the home, is $292 a month, right? So a little bit less than $300. And that's in a perfect world where you can get the max. So going off that and, you know, looking at the income, looking at your expenses, you qualify for the max allotment, having these cuts for people who are already receiving the benefit or, you know, kind of taking it a step further where you have people who never thought themselves as needing that benefit, now having that door closed to them, you know, you're taking away food security for those people, you're taking away health insurance security, you know, and with that, they go from a state of barely of surviving to just barely surviving or even lower than that. There are people who don't qualify for that. The minimum we can give is 23. So if you qualify for SNAP benefits, but the only amount after jumping all those hoops, you only qualify for $23. What can that get you at that point? Having those cuts would basically make millions of Americans vulnerable to food insecurity through having lack of health insurance and thinking about what that impact could have on, like going through Wisconsin, right? The impact of those people who rely on that benefit for their children aren't going to be able to get checkups. You know, they're not going to be able to get food. They're not going to be able to go to the doctor. You know, you have cases where, they have a serious illness and have to go to the ER. You know, the parents are going to be stuck with that medical bill. So the impacts, just even thinking about it locally, kind of, you know, are scary to even think about.
You have decided to go to Washington and talk to members of the Wisconsin congressional delegation about this. That included Senator Baldwin's office and meeting with Congressman Mark Pocan. So let's start with them. Do you feel like Congressman Pocan gets it when it comes to the dangers of that level of cuts?
So when we met with Mark Pocan, and I think of it like kind of like, you know, being kind of just learning even in a deeper level how government works. But when I met with him, you know, as soon as we started talking, I shared my story, you know, and likewise goes with Senator Baldwin's office. You know, they were both on board that these cuts should not be made. They were both saying, no, we shouldn't be having these cuts in general. And that kind of reinforced, you know, my, I would say, trust, or I guess, you know, kind of confirmed, you know, the thoughts that Wisconsin has as a whole, I guess you could say. You know, I don't speak for everybody, but just hearing that from our representative, from our congressman, you know, it really shows to me like at least they're listening to what their citizens are saying, what their people are saying.
I understand that you tried to reach out to Congressman Derek Van Orden as well. Have you heard anything back yet about potentially informing him or a staffer about your view on how bad these cuts could affect people?
We did reach out and attempt to schedule a meeting, but we haven't heard anything back.
We have heard from the congressman, though, that he quite angrily denies that any cuts made in the House Agriculture Committee to nutritional supplement programs would hurt regular folks. He has repeatedly framed it as going after waste, fraud, bureaucracy, abuse, things like that. I ask you, as somebody who, now, admittedly, you've been at this for, like you said, a year or so, but do you look at this and say, my gosh, there is so much waste, fraud, and abuse under SNAP benefits that I totally see how Congress can find a couple $100 billion to cut? Or do you not see such a massive level of waste, fraud, and abuse?
You know, whenever I think of the words and I hear those words coming from people of power and saying, oh, waste, fraud, abuse in these programs, you know, it really comes to a point where with the overall economic impact of just not having these programs, right, if this were a program that was being abused, that was being taken advantage of, you know, my thinking is how would cuts better this program? Because in reality, the purpose of these programs are clear. You know, you have the overall economic impact that we discussed earlier of people having to make that decision of, you know, can they afford to go out to eat? Can they afford to pay for a repair in their car, right? And it always happens at the worst times. You know, can they afford to do X, Y, Z thing? Or do they have to make a decision to go to the doctor? You know, there's times where, you know, when people say, oh, there's waste, fraud, and abuse, when in reality, it's just people looking for help. And that's what I see the most, is people looking for help, looking for that assistance that they would need. And so when they say that, you know, it doesn't come to mind, because in reality, it's just people looking for help in these difficult times.
Zeb, we appreciate that very much. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be here, Pat.
Zeb Martinez of Dane County, working with AFSCME and urging others to contact their members of Congress to oppose cuts to struggling families. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin has a game of cribbage with good friends, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
At Tri-City Services, we're so proud to be celebrating 80 years of trusted service to Central Wisconsin. Since 1945, Tri-City has been the name you can trust to stay warm in the winter and cool in the summer. We're offering a limited-time anniversary special. When you purchase a new air conditioner, you'll get $19.45 off a new furnace. Call 715-423-5840 today or visit calltricity.com to schedule your free quote.
We're not comfortable until you are.
We're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The New Hampshire Senate killed a bill requiring absentee voters to include copies of citizenship documents when requesting or returning absentee ballots. In a separate court case in April, voters challenged the state's proof of citizenship law for in-person registration. For decades, a prospective New Hampshire voter could provide documents to prove domicile and U.S. citizenship when registering to vote, or when those documents weren't available, use a sworn affidavit under penalty of fines or imprisonment. Under that system, there has never been any evidence of widespread non-citizen voting in New Hampshire. Then in 2024, New Hampshire became one of the first states to further restrict its proof of citizenship rules. It ended use of affidavits entirely, requiring voters to provide documentary birth certificate, U.S. passport, naturalization papers, or other documents proving citizenship to register. No documents, no voting. HB 217 went even further, requiring absentee ballot users, including nursing home and homebound voters, to provide those documents with their absentee requests and ballots. Fortunately for Grandma, the bill was killed May 15th. April 23rd, arguments by pro-voter groups were heard in federal district court in an effort to strike down the 2024 proof of citizenship law after dozens were turned away in local elections earlier this year. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You know that tune. You're a star. You know stuff. Why not win stuff? Maybe it's stuff about TV or movies, but still, you shine at useless information. And WFHR and Culver's want to reward you.
Welcome back.
Join the morning show Fridays for a chance to win one value basket and a kid's meal. Be our next superstar with Culver's Star of the Day every Friday at 97.5 FM WFHR.
As Wisconsin is dropping a line in your favorite fishing spot, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, and now for something local from WFHR and WIRI Studios.
We're speaking with Wisconsin Rapids Mayor Matt Zacher, along with our friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Media. I want to talk a little CEC with you right now. And yes, I stole that from you, but it rolls off the tongue. It sounds so good.
Yeah, connecting entrepreneurial communities. That's a mouthful. CEC is what they're calling it. It's a UW Extension program. I went to Platteville last year when I first got in to kind of see what it was about, because, again, that was part of my platform, which is we need to really develop these. And again, entrepreneurialism is kind of a vague word, but in reality, it just means starting business, you know, like working with each other, seeing what the needs are in the community. And there's a lot of them. There's a lot of things that people can be doing on their own to help other people. Again, everybody looks, I know creating widgets isn't the easiest part, but there's people doing that. They're figuring out how to build stuff to clean out, the weeds out of riverbanks or lake banks and stuff like that, and helping people out. So there's businesses being developed. So if I can encourage people to start 5,000 businesses, in the next 5 years, that's great, because we're going to be way better off than waiting for that one big company. Granted, if that happens, we're going to do everything we can to bring them in. Then there's other things that go along with that. How do you get the workforce back in town then if you do land a company like that? Where do they live if we don't have enough houses? And if people that are older are staying in their houses and we can't open those up for young families to move into? Yeah, these are all big conversations that are, more than just snapping your finger and making things happen. But outside of that, this connecting entrepreneurial communities, it's a beautiful time for us to be able to showcase what we're doing here and all the programs that we have and the people that are working towards, the Chamber of Commerce, Mid-State Technical College, the county has programming, the state has programs that work with us. UWSP is certainly in the community helping us with this stuff. Convention and Visitors Bureau, mm-hmm. the city, we all have parts of this entrepreneurial program. So really, as this brings it on, showcases it, get to show off our theaters and all these assets that we have that are just amazing. One of them being the library, which is a great asset for the community. Yeah. And it's a big one, and it costs a lot of money. For me, Heather is our new director there, so we're excited to bring her on and get her some time and learning about what's going on in the community. But I didn't really waste any time in letting her know that my vision is to be able to utilize the space in the library, not just as like a pseudo community center, mm-hmm. but really to develop it as a business startup, a entrepreneurial based system where you have classes there and you have people connecting to other people, learning about marketing and finance and all the things that go along with understanding business to a higher degree. And the library is a great place for that because it's a great building and it already has the resources. So people are coming together to build this inside our community, and I'm excited for it in any way I can help.
Got a lot of great local libraries in the area. I am biased about Macmillan and how great and amazing it is. And yep. that, just in case my mom was listening, I had to make sure. But no, I really do love that place. And the idea of not only it being a community hub, which it is, but being an expansion in that regard is making good use of the space, for one.
Right.
And on the other side of this, too, and again, I credit Central Wisconsin and the creativity and some of the businesses and the ideas that you see around here all up and downtown. And even just extending outside of town, you see that to a degree. But especially here in Rapids, the point of and for those that aren't up on this or something like that, I think I can make it really basic for you. If there are 10 new businesses starting, just statistically, not all of them are going to make it. And that's not trying to be mean or anything like that. That's just business. That's the way commerce works. Mm-hmm. We need as many new entrepreneurial businesses as we can get, because there's no guarantee all 500 of them are going to work out.
Right.
You need that. And for every business that is just opening, there is one closing sometimes. Again, with the changing shift we have and so many different things of commerce changing overnight oftentimes. So, yeah, it's not only a great idea, it's necessary. It's important. That's a very really smart and necessary idea to be not only doing this, but again, going back to your business background, you and the knowledge you can share with that and the ability of being able to even just not necessarily the knowledge you can share, but even just the idea of you championing this and seeing the importance of it. You know what you're talking about. So there, all these factors, just like everything else we've been talking about, are connected.
Yeah, and everything's connected.
One thing leads to another sort of thing.
Yeah, and the other side to that is we have hundreds of businesses that are being run by, the second half of the baby boom generation that are going to be either shuttered and shut down or sold off to somebody who they can bring in to show them their trade. And they're viable businesses. They lived off of them their whole lives. They built their, raised their families on them. I think it's a great opportunity for young people to be able to get in there. And if there's some way of, again, developing that that platform where people who have businesses can come in and meet people who want to start a business or buy into a business and have that financing there. There's plenty of banks that will finance something as long as it's viable and they can trust that they're going to get their money back. That's what banks are for. So the CEC is a week long, or it's a 3-day thing. It starts on June 16th, 17th, and 18th. The information is out there. Check on the city websites and the Dirk County websites. Like, everybody's a part of this program, and there'll be breakout sessions going on for those 3 days and different events going on in different areas. I'm not going to be able to label them all off right now, but there's a lot of exciting things, and people have worked really, really hard to put this all together. So be a part of it. Everybody who's in the community, be a part of it. There's going to be people coming from all around the state to come to Wisconsin Rapids and Wood County at this time. So it's an exciting time. So we're fortunate to have it. And again, thanks to everybody who's putting all the blood, sweat, and tears into making it work, making it happen.
We'll be talking about it on our shows and mentioning it as well. And you can find out more information at wirapids.org. Encourage you to bookmark that page if you haven't done so already. Mayor, before we let you go, just wanted to get a quick update how things are going at the mill. Everything going on time over there, working all right over there?
Yeah, everything's
demolition and stuff.
Yeah, MRD's doing well. Working with Joe and Taylor to talk with We talked with Bill from CRG and Jerry from MRD, and they both gave us the okay to go and film everything. So there's footage out there that we want to get because we're kind of coming a little bit later to the game. Like, some of the mill has already come down.
You were just listening to The Rapids Report, a show for the community by the community. To hear the full episode of The Rapids Report, visit our website, civicmedia.us/shows/rapids-report, the Civic Media app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is locally grown radio.
WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Officials say a 30-year-old suspect from Chicago is under arrest in the shooting deaths of two Israeli embassy staffers outside the Capitol Jewish Museum in Washington, D.C. last night. This man was nearby.
He's like, "I did this. I'm unarmed." He pulls out a red keffiyeh and he's like, "I did this for Gaza, free Palestine. There's only one solution, Intifada Revolution." And he just kept yelling, "Free Palestine."
The U.S. ambassador to Israel says the couple was about to be engaged. What President Trump calls his, quote, "big, beautiful domestic policy and tax bill" squeaked through the House of Representatives this morning by a vote of 215 to 214. CBS's Torian Small.
We've heard from senators like Rand Paul of Kentucky, who brought up some concerns about the massive price tag that comes along with this bill.
Pentagon says it's accepted a luxury jet from Qatar the president plans to use as Air Force One. Allison Keyes.
It is unclear where the money, $1 billion or more, would come from to retrofit the plane.
CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Jane.